But all right. Oh, I should check my own level here. Yeah, that's good. All right.
So you ready?
Yes.
All right. I'm ready. Sue Monkid, thank you so much for coming in this morning. It has been such a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you for having me.
The invention of wings is based on real lives of the abolitionist sisters Sarah and is it Angelina?
Angelina.
Angelina Grimke. And you've said in other interviews that you didn't really know their story before you sort of set on writing this book. How did you first discover them, and why do you think they weren't as well known in the annals of abolition stories?
I think it's ironic that I lived in Charleston, South Carolina, where these two women were born, and I had to go to New York to discover them. I went to the Brooklyn Museum to see Judy Chicago's dinner party exhibit. And it was there on their heritage panels that I came upon the names of Sarah and Angelina listed among 999 women who have made these significant contributions to Western history, really. And I didn't know who they were. And then I discovered they were from Charleston, where I was then living. So I came home and I plunged into learning about their lives. And I was completely captivated by who they were and what they accomplished. And probably what moved me most was what they had to overcome to do what they did.
Exactly. It's a story certainly of them trying very hard and succeeding quite well in trying to abolish slavery. But also it's a story of women's suffrage.
It is. Actually, Sarah and Angelina were the first official female abolition agents in our country. And not only that, they became some of the earliest feminist thinkers in America. Sarah wrote one of the first comprehensive feminist manifestos. And very few people know about that. And her sister, Angelina, was a great orator, and she was the first woman to speak before a legislative body in this country. But the two of them carried on an enormous public crusade for both abolition and women's rights. And yet they aren't as known in the popular culture as, say, a Lucretia Mott or Elizabeth Cady Stanton. And I'm not sure why that is. I think they're well known in academics, probably in women's studies, women's history, and they might ring a vague bell in people's minds, but we don't seem to know them as readily. They're not as accessible to us in American history, so I hope maybe more people will discover them.
Me too, because I certainly thought I knew a lot about 19th century women's suffrage, more so than I knew about the abolitionist movement, although I know they dovetailed quite a lot. But I knew nothing about them, and I thought, oh my goodness, here's this whole treasure trove of history. Which leads me to ask you why this became a novel rather than a biography.
Gerda Lerner wrote a wonderful biography of the Grimke sisters that I highly recommend people reading. But I'm not a biographer. I'm not a historian. I'm a novelist. And the moment that I read about their lives, the incredible conflicts that they dealt with, what they had to give up, I mean, what they lost, it affected me as I think as women who were struggling to overcome, and that's a story. I'm a novelist, so I wanted to write a good story about them, a really thickly imagined story. And so that was the challenge I had, was how to weave their history, which I revere, with this deeply imagined story of their lives.
And that's where Handful comes in as well, because she's imagined, right? She is someone out of whole cloth for you.
She's largely imagined. She is inspired by one small footnote in history, in Sarah's diary, actually, where Sarah talks about being given an enslaved girl at some point, probably when she was around 11 or 12 years old. And this enslaved girl was named Hetty. And we only know that Sarah taught her to read, and they were caught and punished for this because this was a crime in South Carolina to teach an enslaved person to read. And then we know from her diary that Hetty died very early, probably in her adolescence. So with that little piece of information, I knew this was the other half of the story, and I wanted to develop this character and her story to entwine with Sarah. So, yes, that was all largely and, well, maybe totally imagined, yes.
She's a wonderful character, and they balance each other so well, which I am sure is your intent. But there's something about her, and also the city of Charleston itself is also a character, and how Hetty and Charleston work with each other and together, and how they experience each other. I found as I was reading the book that I've never been to Charleston, and I felt like I could smell it.
Well, that's wonderful to hear, because you want that sensuality in the story to affect all the reader's senses. So I want him to taste it and hear it and smell it too. But Charleston is a very sensual city, actually. It's a great city. In 1803, when these scenes were taking place and beginning in the story, you know, it was also a brutal place for enslaved people. And so I was trying to weave the story of Charleston into Hetty and Sarah's life, because it is a place of enormous gravity in their lives. I mean, you can't separate that. Urban slavery formed who they were.
And that is a story of slavery I think a lot of us don't know about. I mean, we think of plantations and we think of that kind of slavery, but the house slaves, the people who live in an urban place, the way you describe them having to get the passage to go out to go buy the food to bring back, that sort of thing. Again, that was one of those things that I didn't really know about.
Well, urban slavery is quite different on the outside than plantation slavery. Of course, inside, it has the same sort of brutality going on. But it only could operate on a system of surveillance and control. And that is what was going on in Charleston. I mean, the enslaved people were on the streets all the time, going about errands for their owners, carrying on business. They were often let out for hire, as they said. And they were curfews and badges and passes and permissions. And there was something called the workhouse. There was a city guard to keep things in place. So that's how it was able to function. So it does look differently than plantation slavery. And I don't think Americans, we're as familiar with urban slavery maybe in our books and movies as we are, you know, with plantation slavery.
As you were taking the facts of Sarah's life and turning it into the story that you wanted to tell, was it difficult to incorporate? Did you have to leave things out that you most wanted to keep in the story, but for whatever reason needed to remove them?
Well, as a novelist, my job is to serve that story. So, yes, you know, I had to leave things out, and I had to graft a lot of imagined scenes onto the truth. But I really think if you read The Invention of Wings, you will come away with a very good understanding of who Sarah Grimke was and what she accomplished, the kind of amazing feat she really did. And her turning points are in this book, the kind of internal process and angst and struggle that she went to, I wanted to portray. So there really is a lot of factual detail there, but that was important to me as a novelist, that she be represented.
The title, The Invention of Wings, where did that story come from? Because it's a wonderful story.
Yes. I wish I could say that I had knew of that story before I came up with the title. So I don't know if it was brewing somewhere in the back of my mind that I, you know, heard of that story or knew of it from an earlier time and it was just a seed in there. But I'm one of these authors that likes to get my title first. It's an odd idiosyncrasy, really, and I don't recommend it. But I was coming up with all kinds of titles so I could have something to focus my story. And I came up with The Invention of Wings. And I thought, yes, that really captures it. And it was only later that I came upon this wonderful African-American folktale about people from Africa being enslaved, brought to this country, and losing their wings. And the story goes that In Africa, they could fly. But when they came here, they lost their wings, and they had to rediscover their wings. And it's a tale of great hope, really. And so, obviously, I was delighted to find that story and began to weave it into my novel.
You talked about before about the slaves being hired out, and Handful's mother is one of those people in this book because she's such a skilled seamstress. She has such a talent with the needle that, you know, she's able to make money. She's able to actually save money. And quilting plays a very important role. So needlework and the idea of sort of stitching a life.
Yes, this is an important aspect in the story. I wanted to portray a way for enslaved women to tell their stories, not just the oral tradition, but in a way that they could preserve this and pass it down in a very concrete way. And I came upon the quilts of a real historical figure, Harriet Powers, who quilted these beautiful masterpieces, really, of art and narration. And there, one of them is hanging in, well, it's not hanging, it's archived in the Smithsonian. And I went there to see it. And the moment I laid my eyes on this, I thought, we have to have a quilt in the story. And it will tell the story of Handful's mother. And she will use this in an almost subversive way to record what happened to her and what it feels like and what it is like to be an enslaved woman. And she creates a visual memoir. And I think the quilting, the taking these pieces of our lives and stitching them together into a whole, into a meaning, it's healing, and it gives us a sense of our life mattering, our life being witnessed. And those are significant parts of the story.
For you, as you came to the end of the writing of the book, did you find yourself thinking about enslavement differently? Did you find yourself finding anything new in there for you as a white woman?
Well, I think the one thing that was shocking to me, very disturbing to me, is that slavery was even worse than I had imagined it. You know, we study this in school, in history, and then we have ideas about slavery from books we read, sometimes for good and sometimes not for good. But when I read the slave narratives, to hear the testimony coming from the mouth of enslaved people themselves, and I'm talking about 19th century slave narratives and, for instance, like Solomon Northrop's 12 Years a Slave, Harriet Jacobs' Incidents in the Life of a Slave Woman, and there are hundreds of them. And then the testimony, the narratives of the 1930s that were preserved finally in an oral way. When I read these, it was as if I was seeing slavery for the first time, really, because it was so much more more terrible than I had even imagined. And, you know, someone said to me that they thought perhaps I had overstated the brutality of slavery and the invention of wings. And I thought, is this even possible? I mean, frankly, I couldn't even put all of it in there. It would be so raw for us to see. So that was one thing that my research revealed to me. But I think, too, as a white woman in the South, at that time, you know, they were vastly limited as well. It didn't compare to the subjugation of enslaved people, of course. But that was another shock for me, was just how limited, how few rights women really had, and how small their world could be as well.
Yeah, I think that is something that a lot of people don't realize, that, you know, both the horror of enslavement, but also the horror of having that sort of cultural limitation as well. And you interweave the two really well. And as you say, it's not as horrible as being owned by another person. But there's a certain really it's awfulness about a mind like Sarah's, who wanted to be a lawyer, you know, who could have probably been a phenomenal lawyer if she had been allowed to do it, not being able to do that simply because of sex.
Yes, that's right. And so race and gender are huge motifs in this story. And they're important to me personally, that we look at the legacies that this time left us. Sarah, she had a brilliant mind and such a yearning to become, to have her life matter in the world. So, you know, it makes you ache for her, really, to see how she yearned for that and how she was crushed almost at every turn. So it seems perfect somehow that she would end up out there on the front lines in her life, later in her life, fighting for a woman's right to speak in the public sphere and to live a life outside the domestic sphere. And, you know, we owe a great debt to these women. And one thing I hoped that the invention of wings would accomplish was just to show us how far we have come and how far we still have to go.
Well, Sue Monk-Kidd, it has been such a pleasure having you. Thank you so much. The book is called The Invention of Wings, and we will have all the information on the website.
Well, thank you.